All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Earlier this week, the Minneapolis School Board approved longtime Minneapolis School District Administrator Rochelle Cox as the interim district superintendent. Cox will replace Ed Graff, who is leaving in June. Graff is not the only leader of a Minnesota school district who has resigned recently. A record number of school board members have also resigned across the state, citing chaos, bullying, and abuse in their districts. Beth Hawkins reported extensively on the great resignation of Minnesota school district leaders over the past year. Beth is a reporter for The 74, a news site about education in America, and she is on the line right now. Beth, welcome back to the program.
I'm always happy to join you, Kathy.
And I'm glad that you're here. Let's talk about the Minneapolis Public Schools for a few minutes. You have an article out this morning on the challenges that Rochelle Cox will face, and there are a lot of them. Falling enrollment, a burgeoning budget deficit are two of the big ones. Where does she need to start?
Well, her to-do list is tall indeed. In Minnesota, as in most places, enrollment is the main determiner of finance. The money follows students. So Minneapolis Public Schools has lost 7,000 or 8,000 students over the last 10 years. And this year alone, 750. It's lost 12% of its enrollment since the start of the pandemic. So she is going to have to figure out how to stretch a smaller budget, a much smaller budget. The deficit for the 2022-2023 school year is at $86 million. And past deficits in Minneapolis have run in the 20s, the $20 million range. So I think the prediction is that Minneapolis will be forced to close a number of very small schools, which of course is the most painful thing that a superintendent and school board can do because people love their schools,
right.
But they're simply too small to sustain. They have a number of buildings that have fewer than 250 students, and that's just not enough to provide librarians, nurses, etc.
At $86 million, is that a real number? And I ask because there was some confusing information about the district's finances during the teacher strike.
Yes. So the district has closed that gap or is in the process of closing that gap. It has taken a large amount of money from its federal pandemic relief dollars. Congress originally intended those dollars to go to shore up academic losses that students were experiencing, to do things like intensive tutoring, extra time for kids who are behind in a particular academic subject for the social, emotional, and wellness components of trying to bring everybody back to school. Most of that money has now gone, all of that money has now gone to shore up 2 years of deficits, the current year and next year. And Congress said you must spend at a minimum 20% of this funding on student needs. So the 20% that's held back for that is still protected. On top of the federal funding, the district has tapped its reserve funds, which are rainy day funds, and is making up some of the shortfall with that. But there are still some $37 million in cuts that are being made, and people are poring over their spreadsheets in their offices as we speak, trying to figure out the least painful way to find that $37 million.
So as you say, the budget is going to be job number one for Ms. Cox. You know, I read that one school board member said that she's a good fit because her approach is trauma-informed. How much damage was done during Ed Graff's tenure?
Well, let's first say that, you know, Graff did have a reputation for not being very engaged with the community. So I do think that some of the disconnect between the community and the schools can be traced to him, but some of it can simply be traced to the broken relationships between educators and school staff and students during school shutdowns, during what's a very traumatic time. Many of Minneapolis's students were experiencing, of course, the aftermath of the civil unrest in the Twin Cities. Many of them had the disproportionate impact of COVID. Their parents were more likely to lose jobs. They were more likely to have to take essential roles in the workforce themselves as teenagers. So there is a lot of trauma there. And Ms. Cox, who has been with Minneapolis Public Schools for 25 years, for many of those years was a special educator and then in charge of the special education department, which means that she had much contact with and influence over policies that affect children who receive special education services because their disability is trauma related.
Mm-hmm. So that explains what the school board member was talking about, really.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Let's talk about, and that was, by the way, an excellent article that was published here this morning. So I want to broaden this out because you also wrote about school board members leaving as we look at this larger issue of resignations. How many school board members have left their posts across Minnesota?
Well, as of May 2nd, more than 100. So 86 left in 2021 and in the very latter months of 2020, and 26 have left this year, six of those in the last month alone. And to give you some context, because I know that doesn't mean anything as a standalone number, there are 2,200 elected school board members in the state of Minnesota, and in a typical year, about a dozen leave without finishing their terms.
Is this across the board, urban, rural, suburban?
It is much more of a phenomena in the suburbs and in greater Minnesota. There have been resignations in the central cities. There was a school board member who resigned mid-strike after protesters picketed his house. And then there was a resignation in St. Paul from somebody who moved out of state. But the contentious stuff, the bullying and the name-calling and the things that were referenced in my story are happening in smaller communities.
What is going on? Why do you think, what are some of the experts saying is behind the bullying, the abuse, the name calling, that kind of thing?
Well, school board meetings have always been contentious. I mean, lots of things are at stake, including the welfare of people's children. So passions tend to run high. But over the last couple of years, school boards have been tasked with making public health decisions about masks and vaccines and school closings and reopenings and things that people are obviously very divided about. And so they've found themselves often in a position where there's no right answer. Regardless of what they do, a large number of their constituents are angry about it. And instead of being sort of what somebody said to me was a community good, like normally if there's conflict, it's about, say, passing a referendum to fund something, or using bonds to build a gym. And people may differ on that, but that's a collective investment. But what's happened now is it has become personal. So the school board members are being accused by their literal neighbors. I mean, in some cases, people they went to grade school or high school with or go to church with, of being bad people, of holding immoral views. And, you know, given the amount of misinformation that has attended some of these debates, one of the political science professors I talked to for this said, you know, they're not even in a realm where there's a conversation about the factual. So there's nothing to combat with.
So these school board members just seem like they throw up their hands and say, forget it. This is not a paid job. I'm out of here, you know?
Yeah, so it's unpaid, it's long hours, it's a hot seat, and particularly in greater Minnesota, what the political science said to me is that greater Minnesota local elected officials tend to be civic leaders in their communities. They own a business, they're somehow otherwise prominent, and they see it as their civic duty. Their elections are rarely contested. They bring a high degree of technical expertise about, say, managing a budget or understanding how debt works to the school board. And there's a steep learning curve. They spend a lot of time spending very large amounts of money on consequential things. And so, no, they didn't step up for this. They stepped up to manage community resources. And unlike a board member in a place like Minneapolis or St. Paul, you know, the anger spills over from the boardroom into the grocery store or the gas station.
See, I have only about 45 seconds left. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm curious then, with this exodus to a certain degree, who's stepping up to run for school board?
Well, that's a painful thing. They're losing institutional memory. Some of the people stepping up to run are the people doing the protesting, which is dangerous in the sense that you don't want a school board packed with single issue candidates. And in some places, there's a paucity of folks willing to step up and fill these important jobs.
It's been a pleasure talking to you as always, Beth. Good reporting. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Kathy.
Beth Hawkins is an education reporter for The 74. That's a news site covering education in America.